Thanks, Cheryl. I'm trusting you can hear me okay. I enjoyed very much listening to Anne, and one of the things that she said was in relation to, you know, that notion of the pain body, where, you know, we try to convince ourselves that everything's cool and I got this and I'm doing my practices, and then we find ourselves in some sort of physical pain. Dismissing the clues. Yeah, where we want to dismiss the clues, and the pain body's one of those that can be pretty hard to dismiss. And so for me, I have experienced a lot of that lately, and generally, I am extremely healthy, and, you know, rarely have just any kind of physical stuff that I consider like even noteworthy. But it was also in relation to Carrie, when Carrie was sharing during her time this morning about the divorce, when her and her husband were divorcing. And during that time for myself, which has been, you know, 30 years ago or whatever it is now, one of the ways that the stress of that situation came on for me was in my eye, my left eye. I have something called scleritis, which is simply an inflammation of the white portion of your eye. But when it occurs, it's very painful. It's kind of like having what I call a toothache in your eyeball. And so it's pretty hard, like I said, it's pretty hard to ignore. And the only way that I can alleviate the pain is to take ibuprofen. I've been to, you know, specialists and had it addressed by one of the leading doctors that specializes in this particular disease. And there really still is very, very, very little known about it. And so you either use topical steroids, which don't work for me, in combination with some kind of anti-inflammatory. And for 30 years now, ibuprofen has been able to be helpful, but ibuprofen also has long-term side effects. And so I've had concern and worry about that for all of these years. And my most recent outbreak with my eye, it's been going on for several weeks now. And so it's not visible when you look at my eye this time. It's on the back of the eye where you can't even really see that there's anything going on. But I know what's going on. And so when she was talking about, you know, what's going on in the mind that is reflecting itself in the body. And again, it seems ambiguous to me because there's, you know, as much as I say that it's been stressful after the move, with the move, and now being in a rental home after the move, it's not that stressful. And so I really don't know the full impact of the why of it. And then you're asking, it was not my thumb, it was my forefinger was infected for 4 weeks as well. And so that was a real piece of work going on there too. So I've had to deal with some just unusual circumstances. And again, for me, the idea of an infection reflects infected thoughts. You know, where am I placing my attention? And while it seems that I am keeping up with my practices and my meditation and my contemplation and all of that, I don't really spend a lot of time. This is probably the first time I've ever talked about anything physical with myself in this room. But her sharing inspired me to also just say that, you know, those things go on for me too. It's not a picture perfect life with just, you know, oh joy, and bliss, bliss, bliss all the time, because it's not. Yet at the same time, I don't dwell on it. And I really haven't spent a whole lot of time trying to figure it out. Scleritis. It's called scleritis, S-C-L-E-R-I-T-I-S, and it's simply an inflammation of the white portion of your eye. And sometimes it gets to the point where there's like a, you know, the eye is so affected by it that they're like a bubble, like a bump forms on the eye. The pressure is so great. So it's really not much fun. But right now I'm feeling fine, and I'm in this now moment, just in the sense that I took some ibuprofen and it's S-C-L-E-R-I-T-I-S, not sclerosis. Scleritis is with your back. Sclerosis is with your back. Scleritis is with the eye. And so as long as I take the Motrin, it seems to alleviate the pain. But again, the long-term effects of 600 milligrams of of ibuprofen every 6 to 8 hours is not such a great thing for other parts of your system, mostly the liver. So I've been cautioned by many a doctor, but when there's no other alternative besides asking for, scoliosis is the hump and deformation, deformity of the spine, yes. But scleritis in the eyes is totally different than that. So it's an unusual thing. And they don't really have a lot of information about it. Even when you go see the top eye specialist that I went to see was in Atlanta, and he said they still to this day don't know a whole lot about it. But you know, for me, I just know that it's an unhealed mind, and I let it go at that and ask for help from the Holy Spirit. And like Regina has said before, it's not so much, I don't pray that it goes away. It's not about that. I sit with what it is. I try to at least accept in the loving all method, accept that it's here. It's been here for several weeks now. I know it's temporary. And in this present moment, I feel absolutely fine. Even when my finger was infected, it was occurring under the nail, almost like when you have a hangnail and you bite the hangnail and then you have that pain. But what happened was I had not bitten any sort of a hangnail, but it's similar to that. That sort of a pain, only it got infected. And so it was quite ugly. And I was afraid of losing my nail, as well as, you know, not really knowing why it was not going away with some pretty powerful antibiotics. But eventually it did. And so I am having faith that my eye will also run its course and I can move on from there. But I appreciated Anne speaking to her experiences as well. And Cindy is saying here on the board that her vision is rapidly plummeting and I have prisms now and I have to ask myself, what am I refusing to look at them? What am I refusing to look at? Yes. What am I refusing to see? Yep. So we have been reading. I'm going to move on from the health stuff, which is, just a fact of what's going on with my personal self, into the experience of my perfect soul instead. It's much more pleasurable. So I've been reading from Experience Your Perfect Soul for a long time now. And last week we started on page 215, and I had simply read, I don't know, maybe a couple, three paragraphs, but I'm going to go back and start from there. And it's in a section called Joy, which I'm really much more happy to look at than the physical pain in the body. So, love comes from living day to day in your source, in an atmosphere of stillness, the breathing spirit of oneness radiates. Know yourself as one. Beloved, consciously seek living, breathing joy, oneness with joy. And let joy rise throughout your surrounding sphere. Include this all-surrounding joy in your thought of me. Sense the smiling feeling ever back of you, ever with you, in you. Joy rises from the eternal depths. The source of life. My light, your light, one inseparable, indivisible. Ask to see me ever, to know me ever. Let the last burden go. Cast it from you. Into my white light. And that whole sense of the source of life, my light, your light, reminds me of our quote today about the unifying field, which Dove had just posted on the board from Cheryl's posting. And that quote is, the belief in separation is the belief in death, because the belief in separation is the belief in beginnings and endings. But the one unifying field is the awareness of continuation. So, awareness of the one unifying field is awareness of life itself. And that's the same light that's spoken about here, that the joy that rises from the eternal depths, the source of life, it's the same life spoken about in this unifying field of awareness of life itself. My light, which is my light. Your light, one inseparable, indivisible light. And then it says, ask, 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 ask to see me ever, to know me ever. Let the last burden go, cast it from you into my white light. Do not let the hour of perfection be pushed from you as impossible of attainment. Do not let the hour of perfection be pushed from you as impossible of attainment. And that's the belief in separation, the voice that says it's impossible that you will attain this state of perfection that we're told over and over and over and over again is our inheritance, is our truth. is what's real, is reality itself. It says, don't let that be pushed from you. And what pushes it from me are these burdens. And these burdens can show up as the pain body, but it's always a reflection of the madness that goes on in the mind that's being attended to instead of lending the time towards this hour of perfection, this time of perfection. The hour of the presence is the hour of the present. So in this present moment, the presence of myself as this light, again, we were told my light, your light, one, inseparable, indivisible. There's no difference. The hour of the presence is the hour of the present. The hour of perfection is not an idle dream, a hoped for paradise. Living in faith, living in the breath of joy, the hour is close upon you. So even during these experiences where there seems to be some sort of a burden going on, whether it's physical, whether it shows up in a physical sense, or we notice the madness in the mind, the chatter, the mob of the mind, as NTI calls it, where the incessant small voice is screaming at you or shouting at you or insistent in its insistent. It's just insistently chattering at you. We can still stand back from that in awareness, living in faith, that is not a voice that is mine. That is not the breath of joy. This hour of perfection, this hour of the presence of God Himself as me, is the hour that is close upon me, despite the voice, despite the pain body, despite whatever the situation that might be appearing before us. And this next piece says, nothing unreal can last. Nothing unreal can last. So this problem with my eye, this present situation, it can't last. It says nothing false can live in the light of my day. So if we're, having a bad day, it would behoove me to spend more time. And I think Anne spoke to this, where she will listen over and over and over, or read over and over and over something that's comforting, something that draws her into the light of day, where the Christ mind is available to be accessed, beyond the worry of, in her case, doing her taxes, or in my case, feeling unsettled, not in my own home, concerned about, what would I be concerned about? The pain in my eye, the long-term effects of ibuprofen on the liver, for instance. The chronic condition that has not been resolved for 30 years now, You know, rather than spending any time dwelling on that, why not live in faith of the truth of who I am, which is beyond all of that? Why not live in the breath of joy, which can in fact be experienced, as Regina talked about a long, long time ago, when she was experiencing a sickness that kind of brought her down to where she was in bed, but still devoting the time, even while you're in bed experiencing pain, devoting your time to the truth that is not the pain, the truth that is not that particular situation, the truth that is not an idle dream, the truth that is not a hoped for change in your physical circumstance, but the truth that is the perfection of who we are, the truth that is one truth, inseparable truth, indivisible truth, that truth that we started off with, that says, you know, even if you are in a space of body pain, sense the smiling feeling ever back of you, ever with you, in you. That is possible. So again, nothing unreal can last. Nothing false can live in the light of my day. And that my is capitalized. So even if the light of my day on a personal level might have some darkness in it, the light of the capital MY day has no darkness, none. So that would clue me into I'm choosing darkness. I'm choosing it, and I can choose again. This says excuses, tardy delays only bind your feet in clay. Shake them free. Go deep under the surface. Breathe deep and long. Let the waves of stillness wash over you. Streams of light are bearing you to me. Breathe deep and long. And one of Karen Worth's meditations, several of them actually, speak about taking deep breaths where we center ourselves into the truth of who we are, breathing God in and exhaling all of our pain, all of our burden, all of our unsettling, all of our worry about long-term effects. Why worry about something that's off in a future? Be in this present moment, letting the waves of stillness wash over you. Streams of light are bearing you to me. Only by looking within, under the surface, straight through to me, can you truly see. So if my attention is diverted by physical pain, for instance, which is a surface thing. It's a surface thing. It's on the surface of form, no less. which is not me. We're being told it's only by looking within, under that surface appearance. And we know that an appearance is simply something that's here one moment and gone the next moment. An appearance is something that we see with physical eyes, a form. It's not who we are. Go within. Don't let my attention be distracted by the appearance, by the temporary. It's only by reconnecting with the truth of who I am, by looking within, under the surface, will I see truly. It's that reconnection. Only by looking within, under the surface, straight through to me, can you truly see. My love knows no memory of past wrongs. My love knows no regrets. My love is fresh, poured forth at the moment it is called. My love is faithful in that it never dies. My love remains forever yours. And this also reminds me, this paragraph reminds me of the tip today from Regina. And it was centered around our judgment. And so this paragraph, my love knows no memory of past wrongs. And my journaling was in reflection of the reading in NTI, which also was all about laying judgments aside. And right away, it brought up a memory of being aware of the weight of judgment. And that memory was from when I was a small kid. I'm thinking that I was around 9 years old or so, because I was in the car with my best friend and her sister, who was 7 years older than we were, was driving. So she had to be 16 or 17 years old. And her girlfriend was also in the car. And we were going to, the four of us were going to where the girlfriend's father worked. And unbeknownst to me, he worked at a car wash. And I was, like I said, 9 years old, and I made a comment. I didn't know her, this girl's father at all. I had never seen him before. And in my small judgmental mind, he looked like he worked at the car wash, and he looked like a bum. And I made a comment to that effect, not knowing this was her father. And she did not say anything to me, but got out of the car and went to go speak with her dad. And my best friend's sister said to me, you know, you should apologize to her. And I had such shame. I was so, so, so ashamed of myself. I was horrified and remorseful. I was embarrassed that I had commented so inappropriately on somebody's father's appearance. And that stayed with me. It stayed with me till this day, the shame of that judgment. And even as a young child, I knew how wrong that was. And I remember going to confession many times and praying that I would stop judging. Help me to stop judging. And of course, the priest would, bless me with, give me the penance, say your four Our Fathers and four Hail Marys. And, off I'd go on my way, feeling somewhat better about myself, but still recognizing that my judgmental habits were painful. They brought me grief. They brought me extreme guilt. And that refraining from all judgment seemed impossible when I was a kid. And still to this day, it seems impossible that the small self, Kathy, is capable of completely letting go of judgment. So again, I'm my love, and this is speaking of the love of God, my love knows no memory of past wrongs. But Kathy's memory definitely holds images of past wrongs. I still experience the pain of those choices. I still hold regret for those choices, and they're in the past. They're gone. It's done, over, but not in my mind. And so when these things come up, it's like, wow, here it is again. I'm 62 years old and I'm still remembering something I did when I was 9 years old that hurt someone. Still condemning myself. For a mistaken choice. Yeah. My love knows no memory of past wrongs. And that's how I also recognize that the love that I seem to understand is not the same love. It's just not. It's not the same love. It's the love that the ego mind tries to tell you is also love. It's not love. It always has conditions. It always has exceptions. It always has some sort of a, what's the word I'm looking for? Some sort of a, there's like a star next to it. It's like, it's not really love, but you're pretending that it's love. Yeah. Cindy says, without the church to tell us we are guilty, we would be open to the Holy Spirit's correction. Yeah, carrying the weight of guilt and remorse that does not even exist anymore. Yeah. Yeah, I know I'm not the only one. I know I'm not the only one. But when I read this, my love knows no memory of past wrongs, it still feels like there's a sense of separation between who I think I am. There's the thinking, there's the misperception, there's the falsity, and who God is. There still seems to be that divide where here's God telling, here's perfection telling me that I hold no memory of past wrongs. and my memory is telling me of past wrongs. Here's love telling me my love knows no regrets. And my love is telling me you have a lot of regrets. And I recognize the voice that's saying that is in fact the ego, is in fact madness itself, rearing its ugly head, trying to get you to believe once again that you were guilty then and you're still guilty now, and your memory is bringing that back to you. Your memory is bringing that back to you, your false memory, your false assumptions, your false recollections. They're torturing you in a present moment time. And this, again, we're talking about the hour of the presence is the hour of the present. And what is the present moment bringing to me? The hour of a past moment. It has nothing to do with, you know, present moment awareness. Present moment awareness is only the purity that knows no past wrong, that has no memory, that knows no regret, that's always fresh, that pours forth when I call to it, rather than dwelling on this old memory that came up. Why dwell there? Is the hour of the presence of truth with me there? No, because I'm caught up in the hour of a past moment. It has nothing to do with present, the presence of in a present moment. It says, abide in your soul in the secret place within. You know, don't ruminate about the memory. Don't beat yourself up for something you did when you were a kid. Don't go there. There's nothing there for me. Nothing. So we're told again, my love is fresh, 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 not old. Poured forth at the moment it's called. My love is faithful in that it never dies. It never dies. My love remains forever yours. Abide in your soul, in the secret place within. The one who loves you is infinite. And infinite love carries on and on. Infinite love carries on and on. And that reminds me of the unifying field that was spoken about yesterday. The unifying field. Yeah, yesterday's quote was, from within the stillness, you are aware of the one unifying field. Stand within this awareness as that of which you are aware. Be the unifying field itself. And you bring the gift of peace to the peacemakers of the world. And the unifying field talked again about today is the idea that it's life itself. Life itself. Stand in life itself. Abide in your soul, in the secret place within. The one who loves you is infinite, and infinite love carries on and on. The unifying field, life itself. Live in the breath of love and do not search for misgivings. Like I said, that piece on judgment, all of it was about judgment today, and that judgment came up in my memory very quickly. That was, you know, that the ego searching for a misgiving that it has held in this memory of mine all my life. That shame. Yeah. Scraps of fear. The hungry dog searching for those scraps of fear and throwing it up into my awareness. Instead, we're asked to live in the breath of love and do not search for misgivings. Trustful love removes the cloud of overshadowing fear. Trustful love removes the cloud of overshadowing fear. Let go from the innermost depths and give all to me. The heart leaps in joy as it finds all is fulfilled in me. As you proceed with your practice of living in this present moment, miracles will become daily, hourly events. Let these words be ever in your mind. Now, I am complete in you, my own divine self. Let these words be ever in your mind. Now I am complete in you, my own divine self. Beloved, this piece is called Shining Gladness. Beloved, shining gladness is within everyone's grasp. The way is clear and plain and distinct, the way of pure happiness. Happiness bubbling from the fount within your heart. Yeah. Seek me. My love will undermine the false and build the new in the self-same breath. Beautiful. My love, seek me. My love will undermine the false and build the new in the self-same breath. You noticed how, at least I noticed how there's no gap whatsoever. As soon as we seek wisdom, as soon as we seek the truth, as soon as we seek the love of God, Immediately, the false is undermined, the rug pulled out from under its falsity, And the new is built in the self-same breath, in that very breath where we pray, let me know my divine self in direct experience. Show me the truth of who I am. In that breath, the falsity disappears and the truth is revealed from its hiding place. And the hiding place only seems like a hiding place because there was a choice to see the falsity instead of what's always, always been there. And it's calling what's always been there as shining gladness. Me, sound. Did you guys lose me? Anybody else besides Cindy? Cheryl, can you hear me? Can you hear me now? Yes, you can hear me. Okay, maybe Cindy, it must be you. Okay, so again, seek me. My love will undermine the false and build the new in the self-same breath. With no avoidance, no hesitation, walk into the unformed void. With no avoidance, no hesitation, walk into the unformed void. Love of me brings resistless freedom, the essence of power. Be willing to let go of personal dependency and rejoice in the guiding hand of love. Move and breathe with equanimity. Watch your words and talk less and less. I personally take that as very direct instruction. Watch your words and talk less and less. And one of the reasons that's meaningful to me is because I talk too much, as far as I'm concerned. My husband talks a lot. And we've been together now for, 28 years or something, 29 years. I don't even know anymore. It's been a while. And he's a talker. And so sometimes, in order to get a word in edgewise, I probably talk more than I normally would be talking. And it's to the point, at least for me, where it's just like, I don't want to compete for the space of words. I want to talk less. It's like, talk all you want. I don't want to reply. I don't want to respond. I don't want to interact. I don't want to give my opinion. I don't want to make a judgment. I don't want to, I don't have to say anything. I don't have to say anything. Why I feel like I have to, I definitely want him to feel like I'm listening to him, but sometimes I'm not, to be honest. Just because he talks so much that sometimes it's just like I feel overwhelmed. It's like, I can't listen to another bloody word that you speak. I'm done with words. I feel over the words in more ways than one. At the same time, I in no way want to be mean to him. But sometimes because he talks so much, it's like I tune it out because he's not really talking to me. He's just talking out loud. And so I take it as he's talking to me when he's really not talking to me at all. He's just talking out loud. And so I'm sometimes I'm like saying to him, you know, were you talking to me? And he'll say, no, I was just remarking, or I was just, and sometimes he is talking to me. So because I've tuned him out, sometimes when he wants me to hear what he has to say, I'm not listening. So it's just become this like circular kind of cluster, you know, and I've had to have some conversations with him about this talking thing. But here's my instruction. This is my instruction. Watch your words and talk less and less. And I take that at face value. And the line before it was move and breathe with equanimity, equality. And to me, that says, I'm moving and breathing from within, where everyone is treated equally as the Son of God that they are. I recognize the truth of them. So I would be moving and breathing in the equalness of that, the truth of that. And from that, I would be watching my words and talking less and less. Because most often, at least in my experience, the words have nothing to do with that equanimity, that equalness. It's more response to worldly concerns and conditions within the world and things that need to be addressed in the world, you know, that kind of thing. It's nothing to do with, you know, the grace of moving and breathing with equanimity. So that piece was called Shining Gladness, and I'm going to just reread the whole thing from start to finish just because I have 2 minutes left, and I like to do that as bringing it back into mind. Beloved, shining gladness is within everyone's grasp. The way is clear and plain and distinct, the way of pure happiness. Happiness bubbling from the fount within your heart. Seek me. My love will undermine the false and build the new in the self-same breath. With no avoidance, no hesitation, walk into the unformed void. Love of me brings resistless freedom, the essence of power. Be willing to let go of personal dependency and rejoice in the guiding hand of love. Move and breathe with equanimity. Watch your words and talk less and less. And with that, guys, I'm giving up the mic. Thanks for joining me.